Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for May 25th, 2010. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Wei Su about the role of FGF and Wnt signaling in regulating bone growth in the skull. Dr. Su joined me on the phone from the University of Rochester. Welcome, Dr. Su.
Thank you.
Before we talk about the work that's described in this paper specifically, we should probably address the physiological process of bone formation. So I know there are two general types of bone formation, one that requires cartilage and one that doesn't. Can you explain the differences between these two types of bone formation and tell us about the context in which each type of bone formation is used during development?
The main difference between these two types is whether cartilage formation is involved in the bone forming process. The first type is called endochondral ossification, and this process requires a cartilage template, which is then replaced by bone tissue, and this is often used in the development of long bone. The second type is called intramembrane ossification, which does not require the formation of a cartilage intermediate, and this process is used during development of a skull vault, the top of the skull, the cranium.
Endochondral ossification occurs through a process of first laying down cartilage and then laying down the bone tissue in place of that cartilage, whereas intramembranous ossification occurs without this cartilage intermediate. In these two different types of ossification, are the same cell types involved in making the bone tissue, even though there's not a cartilage intermediate?
Yes, there are three important types of cells that contribute to the making of bone. First is the osteoprogenitors. They are immature cells which differentiate to make the second type, osteoblast. Osteoblasts secrete osteoids, which forms the bone matrix. Some of the osteoblasts develop into the third type, osteocytes, which no longer secrete matrix, yet are surrounded by the bone matrix.
You specifically were looking at ossification at the sutures in the skull. Could you briefly define what skull sutures are and maybe give an idea of the timeline over which ossification occurs at these skull sutures?
Right. Like I said, bone material is added at the sutures through intramembrane ossification, and there are eight bones that make up the cranium, so-called the skull vault. And these individual plates of bone are separate at birth. They gradually fuse together over time to form the adult skull.
In a normal human, how long does it take for the skull sutures to completely close or for the skull to stop growing?
The skull vault continues to grow in people's 30s, and when fusion occurs, that means that particular part of the skull stops growing. In humans, a disease called cranial synostosis is caused by premature fusion of bone plates. In these patients, the prematurely fused skull bones can no longer grow to accommodate the growth of the brain.
You're specifically interested in ossification that occurs at the skull sutures, and you mentioned that most of the cranium is formed by intramembranous ossification. Does this mean that ossification occurs at all of the skull sutures in the same way?
Intramembrane ossification is required for bone formation of all skull sutures. However, there has been some observation that chondrocytes transiently appear in some suture. However, their involvement in ossification of skull bones is not clear. Endochondral ossification has never been shown to play a role in normal skull development. However, the endochondral ossification is essential for formation of long bones.
You use the mouse as a model system for studying ossification at the skull sutures. How similar is bone formation at the skull sutures between mice and humans?
The suture closure and the growth of the skull bones are very similar in humans and mice in that they both have the same number of sutures and bones making up the cranium.
And the process of ossification at these sutures is similar between the two?
Yeah, the process of ossification is exactly the same between the two.
You were looking specifically at signaling events that affect a particular suture in the mouse skull. Which suture were you looking at, and what signaling pathways were you studying?
This suture is the sagittal suture, and what we are looking at is the interaction between the wind and the FGF signaling pathway. The sagittal suture is the midline suture located at the middle between two parietal bones.
So it's the top of the skull, right along the middle?
Right in the middle. We found that disruption of wind and the FGF pathway causes the sagittal suture to undergo endochondral ossification instead of intramembrane ossification. And this alteration lead to premature closure of the sagittal suture.
How did changing these signaling pathways cause the type of ossification to switch from intramembranous to the endochondral ossification?
Right. The wind and FGF pathway are important for self-fate determination of mesenchymal stem cells. And the development of these stem cells into osteoblast or chondrocytes is regulated by the balance between these two signaling pathways. So our findings suggest that switching the fate of mesenchymal stem cells lead to atopic chondrogenesis and endochondrial ossification and is the new mechanism that we found for craniosynostosis.
So instead of being mesenchymal cells that just directly give rise to bone, these cells are misfated and they become chondrocytes, so they make cartilage.
Correct. During the normal development, there are some transient chondrocytes could be present. However, these chondrocytes just goes away without doing anything normally. But in this particular system that we look at, actually, these chondrocytes are they have functions. They actually are able to push the ossification further through the endochondrial process.
So in the normal situation, those chondrocytes are there, but they're only there transiently, and they don't do much.
They don't do that. They just goes away, yeah.
But then when you interfere with Wnt and FGF signaling,
right,
then you sort of change the fate of these cells. And do more of them become chondrocytes, or do they just stay chondrocytes for longer?
No, actually, what they did is that these chondrocytes actually produce a lot of chondrocytes, and they laid out the bone template, just like what you would normally see during the long bone development. So the amount of chondrocytes are increase and then lay out a layer, actually, and then this layer of chondrocytes then develop into bone through endochondrial ossification.
Obviously, the fact that the suture closes too early, it causes a phenotype, causes the craniosynostosis. But does the bone that's formed at that suture site by endochondrial ossification look very different from the normal bone?
What we found is the bone formed through endochondrial ossification at the suture actually looks pretty much the same as the normal bone. But what we also found is that they actually transform into a different type of suture. Instead of having one layer, they become having two layers, the double layer of bone. So the layer that show endochondrial ossification actually become prematurely closed.
You observed craniosynostosis occurring in mice by switching the type of ossification that occurs at a particular suture to a different type. Is there any indication that this sort of mechanism could explain some of the cases of craniosynostosis in humans?
There have been some reports about peculiar chondrocytes present in the synostosed suture in humans. But what those cells do there actually was not known. So based on our study, I think it's reasonable to think that they might be present for a reason.
So it's a potential mechanism that could explain some cases of craniosynostosis in humans.
But it's difficult to prove this in humans, so you can't really look at the disease progression in human.
You can't look at the disease progression at the cellular level the way you could in a mouse.
Right, in mice.
Thank you, Dr. Su, for speaking with me.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
That was Wei Su, senior author of a research article published in the May 25th issue of Science Signaling. That article is by Maruyama and colleagues, and it's titled, "The Balance of Wnt and FGF Signaling Influences Mesenchymal Stem Cell Fate During Skeletal Development." And that wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.